This is Emily Tant.
This is Kayla Elliott.
Through a partnership with the Saturday Light Brigade, we've had the pleasure of working in the lower level of the Children's Museum.
Every morning, we've walked past a 20-foot-tall sculpture of a great blue heron titled One Great Blue, looming over the entrance, ready to greet us each day.
Not only were we in awe of its vibrant orange, blue, and red physique, but also the message behind it. The response of a few museum guests suggests that they admired the piece as well.
It shows you that you can use anything to make something that's attractive and interesting, and I like it a lot.
I like the beak.
We spoke with Pitty Lodge, director of exhibits who has been working at the Children's Museum for approximately 20 years. Since the piece's installation in 2005, she's seen positive responses from guests of all ages.
It's the kind of thing that makes people smile. When you look at him, he's big, but when you look at his eyes, he's very friendly.
Penny shared with us the story behind his placement in the museum.
I'd worked with Tim before he created One Great Blue. It was later that Tim mentioned that he had an idea of doing something that he'd never done before, and that was using recycled plastic signs. So he started building it in our shop in Manchester.
Next, we had the opportunity to speak with the artist himself, Tim Cullen. He gave us more background on the conception of this project.
It was through a supported project by the Heinz Endowments, which was called the Creative Heights Award. The Children's Museum and myself applied for that opportunity, and we received that support.
He also revealed how recycled art connects the people of our region by repurposing the remains of our past to inspire a green future.
I like taking materials that have already had a lifetime. Those materials carry with them some story or some identity that I try to work with, and I try to allow some of that to carry into a new shape.
While this cost-effective medium has many advantages, using recycled materials can also be problematic.
It's a lot more time-consuming and frustrating searching for things to find the materials that will allow me to do the things that I want to do. There's a lot of closed doors along the way, but when one door opens up, it's usually pretty exciting.
Being surrounded by Pittsburgh's distinct terrain had a profound effect on Tim's work.
The geography of Pittsburgh is really dynamic. It's pretty motivating to try to compete with the landscape of our city, which is made of hills and rivers.
In addition to leaving behind the scraps that would later make up his work, our city's industrial past also became a source of inspiration.
And its history was pretty inspiring to me as a young artist. I think there's the importance of reflecting back to where we've come from and the people that made that possible.
Currently, Tim is working on three new pieces to debut in the fall at the Pittsburgh Center for the Arts, who awarded him Pittsburgh Artist of the Year for 2009.
For more information, visit Kaulen-art.com. That's Kaulen-art.com.
Along this journey, we've discovered some amazing things.
Not only can art be beautiful, but it can carry a message and represent a region's evolution over time.
More than just decoration, art has the capability to inspire rather than dictate and be a catalyst for change. This series was produced at the studios of the Saturday Light Brigade
and was created and made possible by the Heinz Endowments Youth Philanthropy Interns Program.
More information on the Heinz Endowments is available at heinz.org.
Green Compass, a remarkable series put together by a number of folks. 21 people all together coming through our studios in two groups, each a week at a time. So in just five short days, including breaks for lunch and other things, folks pretty much learned how to use equipment, audio collection and editing equipment, booked interviews, developed storylines for these radio documentaries, recorded, edited the interviews, and went from nothing to a complete project in about 4.5 days or so. And we're going to talk a little bit about how those projects all came together with two participants and the manager of the program coming up in just a moment. It's now 5 after 10.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from the Carnegie Museum of Art.
the Oakland Museum offers a distinguished collection of art from ancient Egypt to the present, including masterpiece impressionist paintings, a rare architectural cast court, contemporary glass, and the Heinz Architectural Center. Weekend hands-on art making in the galleries, tours, including a special audio tour led by Art Cat, the museum's mascot for children's programming, and classes and workshops are all part of a family experience where kids can encounter fine art firsthand. Additional information is available at 412-622-3131.
And to get started, I want to introduce you to the two students that we have with us today, who are Dante Haywood and Joe Andrews. Hello.
Hi. Good morning, Larry.
It's really nice to have you here. I find it amazing, you know, how close I feel to you both after just spending, you know, about a week together, and the kind of bonding that takes place when people are working on a common goal. And that's after only a week, but after a whole summer in the intern program at the Heinz Endowment, it has to be even more of a unique thing. And that's one thing I'd like to talk about in a little bit. But first, I'd just like to get to know you a little bit better and have our audience get to know you and talk a little bit about what attracted you to the Heinz Endowment. And I'll start with you, Jill. Can you just sort of explain where you're from and the school you went to and what the process was for you to get involved with the program?
Sure. I recently graduated from Shaler High School, which is in the North Hills of Pittsburgh. And for me, coming to this internship, I first heard about it through a friend who had participated last year, and she had just said it was such a great experience, and she learned so much about Pittsburgh and philanthropy through it, and she really recommended that I look into it. And once I did, that was when I knew that it was something that I definitely wanted to do.
Were you attracted to philanthropy as a potential career, or what especially made this of interest to you? Because devoting your whole summer to it is quite a commitment.
Right. Well, I'd always been involved in a lot of different volunteer jobs. I've volunteered a lot through high school, so this was just another opportunity for me to help out the city that I live in.
Where do you think you got that ethic of wanting to volunteer and help other people?
I don't know if there's specifically one place that it came from. It was just a lot of the volunteer places that the places I volunteered in the past were just things I was interested in. So whether it be string camps or at the local library, it was just something that I was interested in.
Yeah, I got interested in public service at an early age, too, and I don't know why. I mean, I can't point to any one thing. I just liked helping other people. I think children generally like to help, you know, and maybe you and I just didn't grow out of it when it gets down to it. And the same's true, I think, for Dante and Wade. You're heading off where for college?
I'm going to the University of Pittsburgh to study global management and history.
And global management, boy, two very interesting topics, actually. So you're looking at the past and the future, I guess, when it gets down to it. Do you know what you might hope to do after you get out?
Hopefully go to law school and become a lawyer, an international business lawyer.
Terrific. Well, let's turn to Dante Haywood, who's another one of the interns in the youth philanthropy program. And we'll also talk about the RFP process and the whole program. There's a lot to talk about, but let's just get to know everybody. And Dante, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I graduated from Elizabeth Ford High School, E-Town, as some may say. I heard about the program through a friend, through my father, who sent me an email. I wasn't really sure what exactly it was about, but the interview with Wayne really helped. I found out it was about the environment, which at the time I was looking at environmental engineering as a possible career choice, but I chose to go with economics and statistics. But I chose to do the program just because of the fact that I could learn more about Pittsburgh and the whole philanthropy thing, you know, helping other people out, helping where I live.
That's terrific. And, I think no matter what major you choose, as long as you're learning how to think and learning ways of, you know, applying what you've learned, that's really the most important thing. Now, I'm trying to remember, is it Carnegie Mellon for you, most likely?
Yeah, Carnegie Mellon.
Terrific. And in terms of the idea of philanthropy, is that something, have you shared the same kind of volunteer interest and community service interest that Joel has had?
I don't think I've done as much as Joel over here. But I definitely wanted to do something, and this was my chance to do it.
Great. Now, in a moment, I want to talk more about other things you did besides the Green Compass pieces. But before we do that, I'd like to bring Wayne into the picture, Wayne Jones from the Heinz Endowments. And Wayne, it's good to have you here today.
Thanks, Larry.
We're gonna be perfect right where you are. What a program. I don't know how you've done it. The total number, when you have senior interns who sort of help in managing, and the interns that are rising college freshmen, 36, 37 people?
All told this year, we had 30.
Okay, 30.
And so it was seven teams. It's a program that has grown. At one time, it was three students. Last year, we had a couple fewer. This year, we have 30. We're really proud of the way that the program has grown, the way that we've been able to expand and engage community partners. We're really lucky that our staff and our board are very supportive of this program.
Why did the Heinz Endowments decide to create a youth philanthropy program?
It actually started about 15 years ago, and some of the first interns were the sons of Senator John Heinz, who thought it was important for his children to get firsthand experience with the community and with philanthropy. And we thought then that it was important to continue to engage other youth in our grant making. Now it's been 5 years that we've had a grant making component to our youth philanthropy program. And each team of students has a grant pool of $25,000 that they can award. You know, they develop their funding area and review the proposals and make the recommendations. So we thought it was important to have that youth voice in our grant making.
Yeah, can you imagine that now as you think through what Wayne just said? Here you are on a team, and you have $25,000 to disperse. And you go through the process of figuring out how to do that. And Joel, can you explain what your team did and how that all happened?
In the first week of the internship, it was when we found out our teams. And as a team, we had talked a little bit about what we wanted to do, but Wayne had initially given us ideas for different RFP, or requests for proposal topics. And one of ours was advocacy, and we took it to green education for youth. And that was really what we had decided on as a team, what we thought would be the best fit for our $25,000.
Now, was that an easy conclusion for the team, or did you have some debate and arguing to come up with what you're going to do with the money?
Actually, no. It was a pretty easy conclusion to arrive to.
And you two were on the same team, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And would you agree, Dante, it wasn't too hard?
Yeah, there's definitely a general consensus among us.
So your RFP, request for proposal, asked for what? Specifically, what were the what kinds of projects did you want to see?
We wanted to support a program that had an environmental education program for middle school children and elementary school children. Not exactly classroom learning, but also interactive learning, hands-on experiential learning.
And the request for proposal, you took them out to several meetings and had to answer questions and distribute it. What was that like?
We went to the Explorion and the Sarah Hines House for philanthropy fairs, and it was a great experience getting out there to talk to the people in the nonprofit world about what we wanted to see happen, and they were all really receptive, and we handed out a good amount of RFPs, and it was a great way to start off the summer because you got to see how excited they all were about the work that they were doing.
It's interesting to see both sides, isn't it? Because they're very, I mean, you're in a very powerful position, an influential position, to try to help fund people that really want to do good work. Now, have the RF had the proposal started rolling in? I know that the deadline's passed, I think.
Yeah, we've had all our proposals, and we made recommendations or decisions on which one we want to fund.
Terrific. Now, those haven't been announced yet, though, I think.
No.
And we won't announce those this morning. That'll come in a press release. But what was the decision-making process like for your team? Now, it's the two of you and how many others?
There's two others on our team.
Okay. And was it hard to pick and score? Was it easy? Can you shed any light on that without revealing more than necessary, of course?
Well, it definitely wasn't easy, and it definitely depended on each person's view on each proposal. We had a very short amount of time because we only have one summer, and this is usually done over a longer period of time. We were a little bit rushed, but we definitely took it slow and read over the proposals very well and decided on what we decided we wanted, which one matched our RFP the best, which ones we were going to fund.
It's not an easy job. You know, when I've had to, I've been on a lot of scholarship committees, and if you've ever applied for scholarships, I can't tell you, and this is true of my peers too, you look over the scholarship applicant, it's very hard, it's daunting. And Wayne, you must get an amazing number of applicants for the summer intern program, and interviewing and trying to find a diverse group of students, which you did, as well as students who will get along well together, who are worthy of this incredible opportunity as well. That's got to be a daunting task.
It is a pretty competitive process. It is hard to make decisions, but I think we've ended up with a great group of interns and have been really happy with the program this summer.
Now, let's talk about the other RFPs just so folks can get a sense of the kind of issues that you were addressing. And then we're going to talk about the media component. So you were looking at environmental education for middle schools. You have good awareness of the other groups, too, I think, or some awareness. We'll try. Maybe you guys can cover, and Wayne will fill in areas you don't know. There was one on gardening, right? And what was that one called?
Project SWAG.
Project SWAG.
Which stood for Students Working to Advance Gardens. And that's exactly what it was. They were looking to fund gardening projects.
So the RFP here was to try to help urban gardening and other types of gardening. And then some others as well. What were the other RFPs?
There was a co-art initiative for youth where they wanted the children to use some kind of recyclable, environmentally friendly art sources to teach kids about environment and display it somewhere.
Nice. And then a couple more, I think.
Yeah. There was one on removing invasive species.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about invasive species, in part because my yard is really victim to them. But, you know, if you haven't read about invasive species, our area of Pennsylvania is really riddled with these things that grow and grow and grow, this mile-a-minute vine that I had never heard about until working with the interns just grows and hurts other plants and wildlife, too. So that's four. Did we miss one?
Yeah, there's another one on river water cleanup, too, also.
So all of those providing opportunities and a great turnout of proposals coming in or from the nonprofit organizations. And when will those winners be announced? A little later?
Within the next couple of weeks. We have a presentation, and this is part of the internship for those teams on whose behalf the endowments will make the grants. There's a presentation to our president, our staff, and those recommendations have to be sold. We treat these proposals like any other request. They go through the same approval process. They'll be reviewed by our board in the fall.
It's a really great thing that you're doing. And, you know, last year, our nonprofit, SLB, applied for two, I think we applied for three, actually, because a lot of the topics were youth voice. It fitted well with what we did. And we were awarded two of the projects, one through Sarah Hines House and one through the Forbes funds. And I can't tell you how seriously we took the opportunity. The RFPs were written so carefully, and it was clear to us that it was very competitive. It was very competitive. And the respect that you end up having in the nonprofit community is interns is huge. People know that Heinz Endowments intern, that these opportunities are very important and really vie for them. So hopefully it's an experience you'll carry with you for a long, long time. Now, when you sort of conceived, I can remember, 9 months ago maybe? That would be fitting if 9 months was right. We started to talk about, you know, a youth media component and maybe share your thinking a little bit about how, why this came about, why you felt it was so important.
Sure. The director of our Children, Youth, and Families program, Marge Petruska, and I were talking about the internship program and what we could do to really enhance it and kick it up a notch. And we were at a session at St. Vincent's College featuring the Fred Rogers Center, which focuses on the issue of media and the role of media in the lives of young people. And we thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to add another element of youth voice to the program by having the interns actually document issues related to the environment and enhance what they were already doing with the grant making.
And speaking of youth voice, Claire just came in, one of Wayne's kids, to say hi. And then the idea, what happened is we were privileged to get involved with radio documentaries and Pittsburgh filmmakers, with films. And it's just a pleasure. Let's talk about the filmmaking experience first. I'm curious how that went. Can you explain what you did? And were you on the same film team?
Yeah,
so this is good. What was your film about?
Our film was called Growing Up Green, and it focused on youth programs and organizations in Pittsburgh that focused on green education. So we took a look at the Sarah Hines House and GTEC specifically.
And let's explain those organizations. Sarah Hines House?
Sarah Hines House, they have a lot of programs. They have the new LEED certified building, which the kids are in, and they get to learn about the building itself, what kind of environmental aspects are in the building, and how it's good for the environment. You know, they recycle, of course, and all those kind of things. GTEC, I can't remember what it stands for, but they work with SCA kids.
And that's the Student Conservation Association.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
They work with those kids, building gardens, gardening, teaching the kids how to do everything in the garden. And that's very helpful, too.
And the video you made, the film, portrays the children. One of the things I liked was the hard hat tours led by the kids at Sarah Hines House. And also seeing children working in the gardens at GTEC. What surprised you about the process of making the film?
You need a lot of footage to make a 4-minute video. I think in the end we had over 2.5 hours worth of footage, and our video turned out to be about 4 minutes long. And it's a very long process. I'll never look at a movie the same way or the radio after this. There's so much editing that goes into it that it's a very time-consuming process.
Yeah, pretty powerful choices to make, too, in terms of how it goes. How about you, Dante?
Yeah, I definitely think it's hard to pick and choose which pieces you want and which ones will fit your topic well, because whenever you interview people, this is the same thing with the radio project. they talk forever and ever. And you have to pick pieces that go well, but they also have to be good quality too, which makes it very difficult.
I remember, and you signed your evaluation form, so I hope you don't mind my saying this. I remember you wrote, "I learned that I'm very picky." Yeah. did you find that you were really sort of a perfectionism in trying to find things?
Yeah, especially among the editing part, just taking out little pieces, little sounds of things, little snaps, is definitely, I found them quite annoying. I had to get rid of those.
I think there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's like, I forget what editor I used to work with who told me, you know, once you write something, go back and see if you can strike every other word or one out of every two words. And, you know, that's pretty true. Things can be condensed, and usually to get people's attention, they need to be pretty short. Was it hard to make these pieces, although you had so much footage, and in the case of the audio pieces, you had a lot too, was it hard to condense them to be so short?
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of stuff that we wish that we could have included in our video, but it just didn't fit in with the time frame, so...
And any observations about the radio part? The similar process in terms of gathering footage and then going into post-production. But anything else come to mind about that?
I wouldn't say it was easier making the radio piece, but with the video, you had video and audio. So both had to be good. But the audio for the video didn't need to be exactly pristine as the radio. So that's kind of the difference between the two.
Yeah, that's something we notice a lot. People will ask us to give them the kinds of microphones used on TV that, you know, clip to your shirt. And we'll say, well, you know, you might be surprised. Those won't work too well. And it's because when you're watching a video, sound is secondary for the most part. So you don't notice it. But if you were to close your eyes and listen to the soundtrack of the video, you'd probably find it very hard to listen to in any video, not yours. But it can be hard to get good sound from that perspective. I wanted to be sure we mentioned the host sites where interns are. The Heinz Endowments, of course, is one of them. But there are others as well.
Yeah, this year we had a team at the United Way of Allegheny County, a team at the Pittsburgh Foundation, a team at Sustainable Pittsburgh, and a team at Sarah Hines House.
Yeah, and I should mention the Sustainable, all the kids worked at Pittsburgh Filmmakers, and most of the audio pieces were done here at SLB. The Sustainable Pittsburgh kids worked with the Allegheny Front, our colleague Kathy Naur. And their piece aired on the Allegheny Front. Our pieces are airing all this month on SLB. And all of these pieces will soon be on the Heinz Endowments website at heinz.org. There will be links there. Pittsburgh Filmmakers and we and Allegheny Front are also providing links to those pieces. We have them all up now, the radio pieces. If you go to slbradio.org, and click on the green compass. You'll find them all there by name, and I hope you'll listen to them. They just sound terrific. Anything else either of you would like to add about the summer and the project? I'm turning to the students first, and then I'll turn to Wayne to close up.
I think this, like, just this type of congregation between the nonprofits, it produces like a lot of interesting things because, you know, all nonprofits want to do good, hopefully. So whenever they get together, they can produce a lot of interesting things and interesting projects around the community.
Yeah, I just agree that this program was a great experience for all of the interns. I think we learned so much, not just about the environment and not just about Pittsburgh, but about each other and how to work well together as a team. And the media projects were a great element that was added, and it was just a really great experience.
Yeah, you both did outstanding jobs, too, and you're probably already planning a reunion, right, to get the whole, seriously, to get the whole class together. There's got to be a lot of camaraderie among the whole team, I would think. Wayne, any additional thoughts?
Early in the summer when we had the orientation process for the interns, the chair of our board, Teresa Hines, came in and met with the students and impressed upon them that although Pittsburgh's made great strides in addressing the environmental issues here, there's more work to be done. And she challenged the interns, saying, you are the leaders of tomorrow. And I think having the experience to work with them this summer, I feel pretty good about where those leaders will be in the future.
Yeah, I do too. It was really an honor to work with all three of you and with all of the interns too. And thanks for coming in today to talk about the making of the series. You've got busy lives. And we have another feature to listen to. See if you remember this one.
The Green Compass.
Exploring the road to a better Pittsburgh. Where we are and where we are going.
Hi, my name's Fifa.
This is Andrew.
And this is Darcy.
We had the chance to interview Caitlin Lenihan, who is the Education Outreach Coordinator for Friends of the Pittsburgh Urban Forest. She shared their mission statement with us.
Our mission is to protect and restore Pittsburgh's tree population, and we do that through education of residents, citizens in the city, advocacy for neighborhoods, for trees, planting, and tree maintenance.
According to Ms. Lenihan, one of the more important goals of Friends of the Pittsburgh Urban Forest is urban renewal.
Urban renewal is kind of reclaiming green space in the city.
We also had the chance of interviewing Marion Mannion, the executive director of Grow Pittsburgh. She said that Grow Pittsburgh has numerous initiatives that their projects target.
We have many goals to introduce the general public to the idea of locally grown fruits and vegetables. We want to develop the idea of community gardens because not only does it provide the opportunity for people to grow their own food, it grows and develops the community itself.
And a lot of times, neighbors who live right next door to each other, right down the street from each other, may have never met each other until they plant trees together.
It's also an economic development tool.
Ms. Lenihan also mentioned that there are many benefits to having trees in the city.
Street trees provide a different set of values for people as far as energy conservation and crime deterrence.
As Ms. Mannion stated, Grow Pittsburgh and the Braddock Youth Projects have close ties. She touched on some of the benefits the Braddock Youth Project provides.
We have a large project down in Braddock that provides employment for the Braddock youth.
Ms. Mannion mentioned that Grow Pittsburgh has many projects, some of which include urban gardening.
We currently have 4 edible schoolyards, so in those gardens, the children get an opportunity to plant, take care of the plants, and harvest, get an opportunity to eat from it.
Ms. Mannion went on to note, urban gardening is a subject of much importance in Pittsburgh right now, which has had many impacts on the youth that are involved.
Probably most importantly, it's about kids. I think they've learned that they can be good citizens.
This series was produced at the studios of the Saturday Light Brigade
and was created and made possible by the Heinz Endowments Youth Philanthropy Interns Program.
More information on the Heinz Endowments is available at heinz.org.